This conference will now be recorded.
Good afternoon. It's 3 p.m. Tuesday, June the 16th. We'll call the City Council workshop into session. We'll start off the agenda with the roll call. Mayor Spencer H. Smith is present. Michael Blomquist, Mayor Pro Tem.
He is present.
Thank you. Jennifer McCann, place one.
Present.
Thank you. Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, place three.
This is Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, place three, present.
Okay, thank you. John Ryder, place four.
John Ryder, place four, is present.
Okay, thank you. Jody Nicholas, place five.
Present.
Okay, thank you. City Manager David Mitchell.
City Manager David Mitchell, present.
Okay, thank you. City Secretary Julie Helsham.
Present.
Okay, thank you. All right, got a full boat there. Second item on the agenda is presentation by citizens. Citizens who desire to address the council on any matter may do so during this item. Please understand that while the council appreciates hearing your comments, state law, Texas Government Code 551.042, prohibits them from, one, engaging in discussion other than providing a statement of specific factual information or reciting existing city policy, and two, taking action other than directing staff to place the matter on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to the third item on the agenda, new business. Number one, receive and discuss a presentation regarding the proposed 10-year parks, open space, and trails master plan from Luck Design Team, Parks and Recreation Director.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I am not from Luck Design Team, obviously, so I'm gonna introduce him here shortly, but I wanted to talk about the parks master plan and kind of our perspective on it before we get into it. So the Parks Master Plan obviously is vital to the success of our Parks and Rec Department for, you know, our 10-year, the 10-year period that this covers. The first reason is a 10-year Parks Master Plan is required for Texas Parks and Wildlife local grants. We've talked about those a few times because the Recreation Center and Carl Levin Park were both built with a Texas Parks and Wildlife grant. So those are not grant opportunities that are just, you know, going to big cities or anything like that. Those we have opportunities for those. So this is vital to that. Obviously, this guides critical infrastructure decisions that we make. It prioritizes our capital improvement projects based on their findings. And the important part, here's everything that this thing does. It identifies key needs and priorities based on our existing facilities inventory. They conduct extensive public input via meetings, surveys, things like that. And it provides expert analysis from Brent Luck and his team, as well as attributing what the NRPA, the National Recreation and Park Association, has deemed certain guidelines for cities. It compares what those guidelines, how those guidelines match up to what we have in our city in terms of our parks facilities and things like that. So obviously this also is gonna help us to build credibility in our decision-making process. So when we're presenting some sort of capital improvement project or something like that, this has been vetted through this 10-year Parks Master Plan process. And obviously this is taking a little bit longer than the typical 9 months because of the situation that we're currently in. But, you know, the 9 months that everything took place, there was a lot of work being done through Luck Design Team, through our staff, and we're excited to have put this together. A few things I just wanted to hit on. This was approved by our Parks Advisory Board in April. And some of the changes that they made are reflected in the draft that you have. You will hear mention of the 10-minute walk campaign, and some of you may have heard about the 10-minute walk campaign at TML. I think some of you attended that with me. There was a presentation by Stacy Anaya, who is the Lewisville Parks and Rec Director. She did a great job of explaining what the 10-minute walk campaign is, and I mean, basically it's trying to make sure that everybody in your city has a park within a 10-minute walk of their house. So that's very important, that will be addressed. And I do wanna make sure that you all know this does not address Dana Peak Park and the needs that facility has. We are looking at doing a master plan specific to that facility at a later date, because obviously that provides or presents us with a completely different set of needs than our current parks and the things that we have going on right now. So without further ado, I will introduce Brent Luck from Luck Design Team, and he will cover this stuff with you.
Good afternoon, Council, Mayor, staff. Before I get going, I want to say thank you for the opportunity to have been able to work with Jeff and city staff over the last, well, since August of last year. We had also had the opportunity to work with the former Parks and Recreation Director, Jerry Bark, on the development for two phases of the community park. And so our history here with the city, I don't take for granted. And I just wanted to say thank you in the past and again for this, for the ability to work with you guys on this. Sure appreciate it. So I think Gary and I are going to try to toggle through the PowerPoint. That what we wanted to do today was really give a highlight of the process that we've gone through. I know Mayor and several other members of the council were at our public meetings in the fall. And so I don't think any of it's really going to be a surprise on that end. But wanted to go ahead and step back, particularly for our Zoom audience as well, to be able to just to step through the process. Certainly at the end, we want to receive any input that you have. As Jeff mentioned, it is a draft. It was vetted and approved by the Parks and Recreation Board as well. But certainly want to have your input and comment on anything that you see in the plan itself. So with that, I think Gary, we'll go ahead and start stepping through. The first couple of slides that I wanted to do was just to take you through the process of where we went through. And back in August of 2019, we started a physical inventory and a photographic inventory of the park system. And then after that was gathered, we really started moving into the development of our needs assessment survey, as well as having our public meetings. And you can see the dates there. We had two in the beginning on either side of the I-10 corridor in the same week, and then we had a conglomerate meeting at City Hall on the 14th. After that, you can see the dates that we moved into, and I'm going to talk about each of these individually, but we developed goals for the overall 10-year horizon of the plan, priorities that most importantly are in line with the city, but that are captured and stated for Texas Parks and Wildlife as part of their requirements. We looked at facility-based and acreage-based guidelines, and then I'm going to end our presentation today really talking about an implementation plan that as far as the overall pagination of the plan, they're not the sexiest pages in the book, but they're definitely one of the most important pages, so I want to spend time there. So let me step through the next several slides, and as I get going, because I think you might have a PDF copy of both the PowerPoint and the actual plan itself. On the bottom right-hand corner of the slides, I reference back to where it is in the document. So as I'm going through, you can just have that as a marker. But you can see here at Carl Levin, one of the things we did, you see the photographic inventory we did. We actually physically counted each of the park amenities at the park facilities. And then we gave a rating of a condition. One of the reasons we do that is because you can count, for instance, picnic tables. If the tabletop of one is rusted through, it really shouldn't count as one. And so we count it, but it kind of gives you an idea, hey, do we need to have any that need to be replaced in the future? The other thing that we do is on the far right-hand column, we also look at accessibility. And when we're stating accessibility on these, we're really looking at in compliance with ADA, federal ADA guidelines on that end, or also the Texas Accessibility Standards. So I'm going to come back to that because you'll see some yeses, you'll also see some no's as we go through the park inventory. The next couple of slides we'll step through fairly quickly, but I wanted to show that again, each of the parks, and Gary will kind of keep going, for each of them, we have done this type of an inventory. And where that leads to is, and stop right here, Gary, is you can see the physical count that we did. And I'm going to talk to the acreage. If you look at the second column in regards to the acreage of the parks, we'll talk to that in just a little bit. But you can see we have a a tabulation of this is all your amenities that are within the city. I wanted to highlight, just while we're on this page, the trails column. One of the things that we, we studied with city staff, some of the trails are different from mileages that have been posted in the past. So both at the park and the 2010 Parks and Open Space Master Plan. But so those might be a little different than what we're done, but we have vetted those numbers, so just kind of to reassure council on that end. One of the other things that we did was just to show a coverage radius, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the 10-minute walk and why we use this. This slide and the next slide show different radiuses, and so you can see on this one, this is a half-mile radius, which lo and behold works out to about a 10-minute walk, just a kind of dog walking pace. So you can see just graphically and visually where those radiuses cover the city. Can you toggle back up to the previous slide for a second, Gary? And again, this is a 2-mile radius. And so the four neighborhood parks that you see with Carl Levin, the community park, Purser, and Summit Soccer Complex, you can see how they cover the demographic section of the city.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Yes.
That's as the crow flies. So that's not going to be like, you know, somebody's going to have to get in a car and drive because you can't drive or walk through some of those terrains like that.
True.
So
yep.
It's kind of simple.
Yes. Yeah. And again, that's we don't show this just for the trails. But yeah, and in fact, I think you or someone had made that comment at one of our November meeting. So yeah, definitely noted. Okay. The next slide starts to delve into mentioned that we did a needs assessment survey, and I wanted you to see. This was actually question 18, where we asked where you live, in what quadrant or what section of the city you live in. And so you can see the survey distribution. This is the distribution results that we received from the city. Gary, can you toggle back up for just a second? One of the ability that we have, if as a city, before you use SurveyMonkey, you have the ability to query. And so we were actually able to, for all those that responded that they lived in this certain quadrant, we were able to look at specifically, for example, in quadrant 6, what the priorities were for the residents in that specific area. So I'm going to come back to that in a few minutes, but just wanted to highlight that. So I'll step through the results of the needs assessment survey. One of the questions we asked was, how often do you visit the parks? And I'm going to, you know, if you're like me, I kind of squint my eyes and look at the graph and what does this mean? And you can see that the green is once a week. So when you look at Carl Levin, Purser, the Summit Soccer Complex, you can see that should be probably no surprise as far as the amount of visitors that are there. It was a little bit surprising for me that when you look at Good Canal, the amount of folks that actually answered in orange where it said never have gone up there. That's a pretty high percentage of your city that hasn't potentially migrated to those cities.
A lot of never across the board.
Say
again? It's a lot of never.
Yes.
To me.
Yes. I agree. That was an eye opener. So one of the things, and I'll talk about it in just a little bit, some of that's marketing. And in fact, Gary, go ahead and go to the next slide. I think it's on the, save your, I'm going to address your question again in just a second.
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I would ask specifically, so you'll get there, but yeah,
yeah.
We're in the same wavelength. I just thought that was a lot.
Yeah. I agree. Our second question that we looked at was, you know, how would you rate the physical condition of the parks? And this is kind of in that same vein that you were just mentioning. If you look at orange, this one, it's don't know or not familiar. So again, look at Good Canal and Kern Park, and you see how many people just flat out don't know. Well, they don't know because they haven't visited.
Right.
So, you know, so that's kind of an interesting thing that when we were talking with city staff about marketing, getting the word out to the, maybe everybody doesn't know what all the city has to offer throughout, you know, all parts of the city. But that was kind of a staggering eye-opener. I agree on that end. On question 3, we asked, are the parks easily accessible? You know, I just mentioned earlier that accessibility, as far as we rated it in the inventory, was more from an ADA compliance standpoint. This is pretty open as far as how it can be interpreted. So accessible could mean, hey, does it mean that once I get there and I park my car, can I get there? Or again, kind of, is it just, hey, I'm here at my house, can I get to a park fairly easy, either vehicular-wise, pedestrian-wise, et cetera? But this was high as well, as far as folks kind of saying that, yes, we feel as though the parks are accessible.
Can I ask you this? When was the data collected, at those three meetings? Or I may have missed that part, but this, I think it's a little bit older because the Facebook page has been super productive since, what, August of last year? We kind of made a big turn with Facebook. So the data was collected right before that, right?
Well,
right, because I'm like, I think that it would be a little bit better now, if not a lot better, because the Facebook has really amped up.
Yeah. I will say the survey was open from basically September 1 all the way to February 1 on this end. So it is pre-COVID as far as the results. And again, from South Austin, and you saw a lot more walkers. It's not just an Austin thing. That was kind of an everywhere thing, where a lot more people are out and about and stuff. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Communication's always key. One of the things we ask is how do you learn about parks and rec opportunities? Obviously, the magenta that you see there is the social media, the website, and the top three, the good old word of mouth. But as you look at the next slide, when you're talking about social media, we dived in a little bit further. You mentioned Facebook. There you go. I mean, that's the city's best avenue for communicating, according to our needs assessment results. On question six, we asked, does the city have enough parkland? Historically, those that answer yes or no are more closer together to that. When you see the yeses are, you know, north of 60%, that's usually closer to 50%, and much more in closer proximity, as I mentioned, to the no's. So the fact that your community stated that pretty emphatically is not something just to discard or cast to the side. And I'm gonna, one of the themes that kind of kept coming up through our public meetings, as well as through the open-ended comments, we'll give some validity to that, and I'll talk to that in just a minute. On question seven, we talked about funding methods, and again, knowing that historically the councils here at Harker Heights have been fiscally conservative, we wanted to ask that, and you can see kind of those that were wanting a property tax increase or not wanting a property tax increase is one of those models, falls historically the council's belief that we have worked with on that end. So as far as being fiscally conservative, impact fees, voter bonds, something that would have to be voted on, were definitely highlighted here as far as mechanisms to fund for major park expenses in the future. On question number eight, if you haven't had a chance, I would recommend, this is our one of our open-ended questions that we included as appendix in the back of the document. Those are always very eye-opening, in some cases entertaining to read, but it certainly gives a pulse of what folks are thinking that maybe just the math doesn't distill. And so I would highly encourage, if you haven't already, to look at the appendix and the comments that are included with that, to give context to the rest of the document. On question nine, this is another one of those things as far as how we feel as though, how residents feel existing park needs are being met. And so as an example, I'm gonna use the second bar going across the top is for baseball fields. So if you look at that, green means that currently we feel as though that this need is being met. Where on the other end, the orange is highlights, we don't feel like this is being met at all. So when you see items like towards the bottom, the lacrosse, the indoor shooting range, again, the BMX track, some of those that need is not being met, that doesn't necessarily mean that we are needing it, okay? Because we talk about that in priorities later. It's just kind of a cut, I almost said black and white, but it's actually in color. Shows just visually and graphically whether or not that need is currently being serviced, okay? And that's a an acute difference that I wanted to highlight as we start to talk about the priorities. On question number 10, we did ask for residents, and Gary, I'm sorry, this is a continuation of question 9. On the next slide, question 10 in our survey, we asked residents to highlight the top three park amenities that are most important to them. And so what we did is we took those 1, 2, or 3, weighted it, giving higher priority to number 1, and this is how the math came out. When you look at the amenities, the high priorities, the hiking and walking trails, that's not a surprise. As I have done this over the last 20 years, hiking and walking trails, also biking trails, are always number one. I hate to say always, but I think it's always on that. And if not, it's a very close number two. It's always one or two in the running for sure. Where I wanted to highlight is when you talk about the difference between the high, medium, and moderate priorities as far as where the results that we heard back from the needs assessment, hiking and walking and biking trails and splash pads were far and away a much higher priority than anything else on this list. And so when you see all the other items, you can look at the math and there's a distinct break between each of those. Same thing with the break between the medium and the moderate priorities. That was the thing that we looked at as well. So I mentioned earlier, as we go to the next slide, back to question 18, when we queried, we asked specifically on question number 10 and got results for each of the specific zones. So you can see here how this is how each of the different zones that we highlighted through the city responded to that same question. So fairly congruent throughout. You can see that the hiking and walking trails bubble to the top on just about as high priorities on just about every zone, and even in area 4 it percolated to the top as far as a medium priority. So again, I thought it was pretty interesting that that same vein of thought with the trails and the splash pads were throughout each of the zones there. Okay, other observations, mentioned this earlier. One of the things that we pulled from, and this kind of goes back to that one question of the baseball fields and wanting to have, do we feel as though this need is being met? Through this and the open-ended comments, one of the things that we heard a lot is that we need to invest in what we have, that we do have good, for instance, on your athletic fields and infrastructure. You do have a good infrastructure in place. Let's keep investing in it and maintaining it. Some of the items as far as not knowing the different parks and different amenities and what different amenities were available at each of the different parks certainly underscored in our discussions with city staff that we need to really market and communicate what all is offered within the city. You know, back in the late 2000s, 2007, 2008 was when the city really heavily invested in, for example, the community park. There's the softball fields, the baseball fields. I know Summit has been developed during that time as well. And so you can see that the citizens have been appreciative of the development that took place almost a decade or so ago. And what we heard a lot is take care of what we have. That third bullet that you see there also really works well with the 10-minute walk that Jeff had mentioned earlier. We heard loud and clear the need to connect for connectivity throughout the city, whether it was two parks, parks to homes, park to cultural amenities, et cetera, but that connectivity, and as you mentioned, council member, this was pre-COVID, so I think that would just be underscored and maybe even a little bit bigger bullet at this time. And then lastly, one of the observations that we heard more in the open-ended comment was the need to provide for our teams. One of the things that I had shared with the Parks and Rec Advisory Board that from our last, when we went to Baltimore for the NRPA conference, was the definition of teens and what that age group is changing. And so it's not, as of July 2nd, I will have 3 that are in those teenage years. The scary part is that that's the bottom line limit. The top line limit for teenage and what that age is, adolescence, is creeping into the 20s, whether it's boomerang kids coming home, etc. So, yeah, a lot of a collective sigh
what
throughout.
Was that, Spencer?
So providing for teens and adolescents are really a key part because they're here in our community. We've had other cities and municipalities stress that, hey, we have a lot of folks that have been homegrown, but then they leave. They leave, go to college, go to other work opportunities, et cetera, and they don't come back. So really from a retention and attracting a growing community, providing for teens, older adolescents and stuff is very important as well.
What would be an example of that? Like what would be different than what the parks have? I mean, because I think we have a good variety across mm-hmm. the board, especially for kids, and I still call them preteens, but.
You know, I think we did a presentation that showed some of those things to the Parks and Rec Board that might be a good follow-up if you're interested that we could provide.
I'm just curious for an example. Like, what is something that's considered for teens? Like, skate park type thing,
yeah,
or?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and I can kind of continue to address that a little bit. Some of it is just how space is created. One of the examples we used is people are going to parks for, it was kind of coined as Instagrammable moments. Mm-hmm. So they want spaces that, you know, you can do your picture, your selfie with Instagram with the sign in the background.
Surprised.
It may have nothing to do with a baseball field or why you're there. It's the sign. It's the...
That's right, except they don't talk to each other, so they'll send
yeah,
a picture.
Yeah.
Got it.
So it's almost like, you know, if you go to Disney World, everyone wants their picture, you know, out front, you know, with the marquee sign and that sort of thing. So it's really about space creation.
Okay.
There's certain amenities that are specific, like, you know, whether it's a skate park or that programmed space, to where what we've seen a lot is, for instance, with skate parks, is that it's moved to, you know, back in the old school days, it was the bowls. Well, now they're wanting to, you know, and my oldest is a skateboarder, they like to grind on anything that has an edge. And if they're able to be seen while they're doing it, they don't want to be necessarily stuck in the bowl that's surrounded by a fence these days. They want to be seen, and again, some of those Instagrammable moments. So it's really about space, how that space gathering is organized and that sort of thing, more than just specific, hey, if you put a skate park here, it's, you know, that hits that box or checks that box kind of.
Okay,
thing. So,
well, that makes sense though.
I'll follow up with Jeff to kind of give you that, because it's not my presentation. It was, again, from an NRPA presentation.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
Yeah, it's pretty eye-opening. It's just a
my
different
My space is that fountain. That's where I put my kids, and I take a picture with the fountain in the back.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me just ask you that. Our local paper has, when they have the Harkrights Herald, they have an interview with some, I don't know how they pick these people, but anyhow, they have different people. And that is a continuous comment about having things for children. And I step back to think about what I had growing up. My folks said, get out there and doggone amuse yourself and just don't get arrested.
Turn on the water hose.
Okay? And it's just, you think of all the programs that KISD has in school and after school, all the things that we've defined, the amenities that we have, and for people to think that, okay, what is that population of skateboarders or BMX or whatever the thing is the cost benefit. That why would the city invest, you know, those assets and that property for that specific thing? Mm-hmm. And it's something that may be just a passing fad.
Yeah, that's always a key thing to consider. I mean, that answer to that is changing at times. One of the things that we've developed as part of this plan is talking about what are some of the things that the city could do that's innovative, which doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be costly. And, you know, we gave an example, you know, just as Jeff and I were spitballing. If you're familiar with the baseball fields there at the community park and the slope that goes, I guess, to the west, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I was involved in the grading and all that, and that was basically putting two pancake fields on a slope that was like that and making it happen. And so one of the things that we talked about was broadcasting wildflowers out there as an example, where You know, currently staff has to mow that. They have to maintain that 4-to-1 slope, 5-to-1 slope. But why not do a seasonal interest where you could broadcast wildflowers that are, again, Instagrammable moment, mm-hmm. as the trail goes around, potentially saves staff on having to mow it because you got to let those go to seed and shred and that sort of thing. So, but that's innovation. You know, that's kind of one of those things that all of a sudden is brought to your parks that are temporal, but that's different. You know, the parks, it's not just the green ball fields all the time. And Mayor, one of the things that we looked at, I mentioned earlier, my oldest is a boarder. Up until his freshman year, he was involved in select soccer. So he was one of those that when he, you know, as he likes to say, when he hit his freshman year, he retired. and so now I have the oldest in my family that was looking for an outlet, that organized sports, both school and select wasn't hitting that mark. And so that, you know, he had already kind of started skateboarding, but that was his outlet. And so it's very interesting to see through his eyes a park space, you know, because where city staff might look at the wax buildup on the, you know, a rail where skateboarders have been grinding down it, you know, my son looks at that as, hey, that's a great opportunity where I can grind an edge, you know. And so it's really trying to find that balance of what makes sense. And part of it is the programming and looking at, you know, one of the things just again with COVID that we're having to look at is just spatially, because outdoor environments, you know, are changing. It's not necessarily everyone's going to gather around the one picnic table that's at a playground. And it's going to be, you know, spacing is going to probably continue no matter what a governor, you know, has an edict on or a local municipality has an ordinance on. So it's a changing answer, mm-hmm. But I think it can be looked at both in infrastructure. We've seen lacrosse, for example. You know, when I was going through school, lacrosse was still a Northeast Midwest sport. Well, a lot of those folks have moved down here and have brought that passion with them. And so, planning that space right in line with your soccer fields or other multi-use fields it's coming more and more important. Mm-hmm. So some of that could be infrastructure dollars. Others are, for example, like the wildflowers that are much more, you know, cost friendly.
So. The social media aspect's not going away. When people started taking pictures of food, everybody thought it was a trend, but it's something people still do every day. So they take pictures of everything they do all day long.
Yeah.
And the more they do that and tag the park, great marketing for us. But
yeah. Well, that was, you know, one of the things that was highlighted again is seating arrangement. You know, that particularly with the younger selfie crowd, having stackable seating, because hey, if you have the stackable seating, all of a sudden everybody's in the picture and it doesn't matter if your arm's long or short or selfie stick or no selfie stick. You know, so just there's all sorts of things like that can just make it more, and I love the term Instagrammable, because that's really what is moving the needle for experiences and documents that, hey, I've been here and I've done that and I'm part of your community.
Crazy but true.
So as we go to the next slide, I had mentioned the goals. We had four stated goals that were developed with the Parks and Recreation Board. The first one is accessibility. And again, that's both vehicular and non-vehicular access, and that's for all abilities. One of the things that has been a big emphasis in the park planning communities, specifically over the last 4 to 5 years, have been all-inclusive parks, parks for all abilities, and that's really any way you slice it. Where ADA at a federal level really hits minimum standards, and this is all abilities parks and are for inclusivity. That really is the spirit of truly making sure that that parks are accessible all the way around. Sustainability, a great opportunity to look at environmental awareness, environmental placement, when we're talking about everything from potentially like the use of recycled materials in our parks. What a great opportunity to educate the citizens of Harker Heights with just environmental awareness in general. And that can be from design standpoint, materials, means and methods. And it also can relate back to park staff and having best practices in maintenance that are, again, are more sustainable in nature I'll harken back again. The wildflowers were a great example where instead of mowing once weekly, you know, you're shredding once every 4 months on that particular slope, and you know, that has an environmental impact and stuff as well. The third goal was maintenance, and again, this gets back to the take care of what you have comments that we heard loud and clear. The city, you guys, as a city, are truly blessed with a great park infrastructure. Should not be taken for granted. So just to make sure that that you know existing elements are taken care of, that as future items are constructed and developed, that the maintenance is looked at. It's an end goal in mind. And then lastly, innovation. You know, we don't want the parks to be stagnant. It's a media-driven world, and so what was fresh last week doesn't mean that it's fresh this week. I always go back to zoos in particular had this issue where, you know, they would do the big panda enclosure, you know, pick an animal enclosure, and then, you know, it's dated a year later, you know, kind of thing, or everyone's kind of going through that. So look at innovation, whether it's practices, programs, what you can do to really highlight and make your parks active in the minds of your residents. Park acreage. This is just, I'll tick through these slides fairly quickly, but this rolls back up to the inventory that you saw earlier as far as the acreage, and you see the 178 acres that we have. On the next slide, you can see that I wanted to highlight, if you look at the totals, currently you have 5.61 acres per thousand. The National Rec and Park Association doesn't have a finite standard, but usually they have a range of anywhere from 4 to 11 acres per thousand is what they're looking at. So one of the things that we wanted to do, you can see that the box that we have around the community parks, this is just highlighted in the PowerPoint's really not highlighted in your document, but over the next 10 years, this goes back to that slide where folks said, hey, we think we have enough parkland already. We do have planned in a modest increase of 20 acres over the next 10 years for parks, for community parks, which basically just maintains the level of your park acreage right now. So you can see in the far right-hand column, 2030 guidelines for the population that's projected. And again, the population projections that you see there were vetted with Mr. Solis in your planning department. It's lockstep with his projections. But you can see the acreage goes from today's date, 5.61 acres, decreases a little bit to 5.41, but it's right there. I wanted to highlight, Jeff had mentioned earlier, nothing in the plan specifically mentions Dana Peak. Dana Peak, of course, if that arrangement happens or transference with the Corps, if that happens, that changes a lot of the demographics that are associated with this plan. Even though it would not officially, it'd still be Corps land, it would not be city land. It has that amount when you look at, what was our final acreage that Dana peaked over 2,000? Yeah.
Wow.
You know, when you put that in conjunction with 178, it certainly changes the whole perspective of the city's park system. On the next slide, we also talked about facility guidelines. We like to benchmark this. There's several, if you look at the sources that we've highlighted below. Some items like ball fields, you know, any kind of athletic fields, there's a fairly standard benchmark that has been accepted nationwide. However, on certain cases, there's items that are highlighted that was more specific for the city of Harker Heights. So, but you can see, again, this goes back to our inventory and we project them out as far as where you need to have growth. For example, if you look at the picnic tables, currently the 83, and we're projecting in 10 years that we're adding 20 different picnic tables for our into the park system. Again, that's more people, you're gonna need more tables. So part of what that does is that arms city staff that if they're, when they were starting to go through budgeting, that you know, Jeff can say, hey, in order to hit this target, we need to bring on 4 new picnic tables this year. Or if there's a new parkland, et cetera, or developing an existing park, that might be one of the elements that are brought in. So we're just kind of plugging that in. Specifically, too, I wanted to highlight on the trails, the second item from the bottom, where we're going from the 4.46 miles proposing to 8. Again, that's part of that, the connectivity and vision of the plan. Okay? Lastly, wanted to talk about priorities. So we broke our priorities in the plan into indoor priorities and outdoor priorities. We did that because indoor priorities typically have another zero, if not two zeros, at the end. And so it's good to have those broken out. Under the outdoor recreation priorities, I wanted to highlight specifically on this slide the high priority items. If you remember from what I showed you earlier, walking, hiking, and biking trails were the number one priority. What was number two? Splash pads. You see it's number four on this one, okay?
Why is that?
I wanted to give highlight to that. Really, one of the things that we wanted to do was to set the plan up for the possibility of a successful Texas Parks and Wildlife grant application. And so items two and three there, you can see, are picnic tables and benches, which we know we're wanting to increase anyway. Texas Parks and Wildlife, when they score a grant, they look at your top three. And so if you don't have your top three items in there, you lose substantial points as you go through the grading process. And so just about any park that I think that Jeff would, or city staff would maybe move forward with in regards to a grant app, we'll have that trail. With that trail, you're going to have picnic tables, you're going to have benches, and so you can see in parentheses we showed trail, classifying those as trail support amenities. So as far as the city, we really look at 1, 2, and 3 as one, because it's trail and the things that support a trail, and then there's your water playscape. The semantics becomes is that if you don't have a playscape or a water splash pad in your grant, you're really going to be penalized, and to the point that your grant probably will not be competitive.
We do need them, though.
We do, yeah. We do, but it just leaves the flexibility. What will happen is that as a grant is prepared, if you can say, hey, we're satisfied not only the top three, we're satisfying the top four, more power to us and glory and all that, but we want to make sure that we're satisfying the top three. And so that's really what we did with this plan, and one reason I'm highlighting it, because we're not doing a bait and switch. Really, we're kind of doing a 1A, a 1B, and a 1C. Yeah, just to make sure that we're setting the city up for potential success with the grant application.
How many cities have had to shut down their splash pads because of their drought?
How many cities have? I know you've been on calls with different directors.
I don't know about cities that have drought.
Yeah, we're in Texas. Right, but it's just the same thing. I mean, you go down, just it's not a splash pad, but just all the fountains at UT, they shut all those things down.
But okay. You know what's odd is their splash pads aren't, because even when they had a no water, my kids were still at the splash pad, and I didn't even realize that, but now that you're saying it, I'm going, they still kept those going.
They kept them going. I think, if I could add, Mayor, a lot of the technology now, they do recapture on
that's true.
On the modern ones, so they recapture, rechlorinate, pump it back out, so it's not like it's
I'm sure
water is being added to the system, so you have some loss, but you're not just, it's not total loss. Everything
you're right.
It's very similar to our pool, the circular. I mean, it's a lot of the same features that our pool has.
How do we bring in, say, like the Y, their facility down there on Beeline? Do we fold them in, or?
That is something I'll lead in. I thank you, Mayor, because I'll probably go ahead and jump to the implementation. That it is a great segue. On the next slide, I'm going to, if your eyes are like mine, you're squinting. And so I'm just going to show you this format, and then I have an enlargement to help all of us see it a little bit better. But under the implementation plan that's shown on page 47, we listed priorities, what goals they satisfied in the master plan, specific projects, where they're located, the type of project or construction, whether it's master plan, design, et cetera, a description, potential funding sources, and a range of a funding amount. One of the things that I just wanted to highlight and make sure that council knows is that this isn't encumbering this council or future councils to any kind of expenditures, okay? It's really just a target when we see that estimated budget amount. That's a range that as discussions potentially take place, you know, that's the range in today's dollars that we're looking at. But if you'll skip, Gary, to the two slides down, and one more. This gives a better example, so I'm just going to lead with the top one that and again, this is just an enlargement of the two slides that were previously shown. But our number one priority is, again, the walking, hiking, and biking trails. And you can see, as Jeff, when Jeff was up here, he mentioned the 10-minute walk. We have that up there to potentially look at developing trail connectivity and developing a master plan with that in mind, okay, as its own separate study of how can we make that 10-minute walk feasible, make sure that it's vetted through leadership here and moving forward. So on that one, there's no expenditure cost except for the design, and even potentially that could be done in-house. So, but as you look at number two, still number one priority, for example, with the Kern Park ADA and path improvements. Currently at Kern Park, there's no trail that links from a public sidewalk or roadway system, parking infrastructure, to any of the park amenities that are there at Kern. So in this case, it would be providing a quarter-mile loop trail within the park that would provide loop there at the park site, but also provide accessibility to the playgrounds, to the basketball court, et cetera, in that area. So you'll see that some of those, two-thirds of the way down, the ADA batting cages. You know, if you look at it, again, fairly intimate with the community park since I was involved on the design, the batting cages came in afterwards. That technically is not an accessible feature in your parks. All it takes is a sidewalk connection, short sidewalk connection. So again, we're not talking necessarily bukus and bukus of dollars for that to happen, but that would satisfy that as an implementation plan as well as part of your top priorities. The Summit Soccer Complex, one of the things that was mentioned in both public meetings and the public comments responses in the survey was to have the loop trail, the possibility of a loop trail at the complex. Love the soccer fields, but would like something else for parents and patrons to do besides just the soccer. As you go through the outdoor priorities, the last two items, you can see that we are looking at ways that we have for a potential splash pad. And Mayor, the very last one on that page was exploring the possibility of splash pad interlocal with the YMCA to do that. Certainly, there's that possibility. You know, when one of the things that we were able to do just through our design process and everything was to pull up old aerials. Sometimes you could see on the old aerials parking associated, water on at the Y. Other times, nothing. You know, and so certainly we felt as though that was a great avenue that if there could be a possibility of an interlocal that would benefit both the Y and the city to provide that need. So, again, Mayor, thank you for serving that up as we transition to this one. The last slide, too, was just a continuation of some of those implementation items, and we can discuss any of these that you would like. But you can see how we have playgrounds as recreation, and really all of these highlighted the high priorities and some of the moderates with the playgrounds and the dog park, potential locations, things that we could look at, and some of them are at different phases in moving forward. Gary, can I take you back up just one slide, because I didn't want to gloss over. We had talked about the possibility at Comanche Gap, fourth from the bottom, and moving that forward. One of the things that were highlighted, particularly at our public meeting here at City Hall, was the need to do something at Comanche Gap. One of the things, there's a lot of great elements that are there. A great spine and great phase one improvement for that particular site would be a trail system that would bring some energy and people to the park. And that trail system would probably be a lot different from the one that you experience at the community park right across 24th. It's just a completely different environment. So I didn't want to, I glossed over that and I didn't mean to. I wanted to make sure that highlight early conversations with CSAP, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, Jeff, but that would also, in the upcoming years, would probably be one of the best candidates for a Texas Parks and Wildlife grant moving forward. So.
Yeah, I see that could be a whole unique type of park in this city, just because of what's already there. Some things we talked about is having an adult park there. Thing is emphasize the nature that's there. Mm-hmm. Some of the initiatives we got with the monarch butterflies, got a lot of room out there to plant milkweed and other things out there, as well as some of our other parks. But have, you know, kind of winding trails, basically less is more. But you could have maybe a bandstand or, you know, however you guys develop, you guys do those things. It's something that's unique. And the other part of that, though, is talking about the connectivity of our park. So if Dana Peak Park happens in the out years, we've got that. We've got our community park. But one other concern I've got, though, is that we have the community park and we've got a lot of these sidewalks set up, is basically how people get from A to B. I know in Austin they have a lot of bridges down there. So my thought is have we looked at the possibility? We know eventually 2410 is going to widen someday. But I think that from a safety standpoint, that we might have to look as a walkover bridges for our pedestrians, just to get from the north side of 2410 and the high school to get to the south side over there in a safe manner.
That's one of the reasons, Mayor, that, again, we're still looking at the implementation plan. The very first item is the need to put that plan together, because that encompasses so much. Besides, it's not just internal to parks, it's connectivity, like you said, from A to B, park to park, parks to other cultural amenities throughout the city. And that's a full comprehensive effort to do that. I mean, because that's using sidewalks, that's using new trails, off-road, you know, trails potentially, as well as ones that are typically part of a normal road corridor. But that's a visionary plan, and that's one reason that we led off that as our first one under implementation to potentially look at, because that's going to be more and more need. One of the things that we highlighted as we, you know, it used to be, as far as, you know, what is a trail and who does it provide, it used to be just walkers and bikers, and that was the big conflict, you know, if a biker was going too fast. Now it's, mentioned the skateboarders that are there, now it's strollers, joggers, or, you know, baby joggers, segways, razors, you know, motorized that can, you know, go 20 miles an hour, you know, that doesn't mix good with, you know, with a mom or dad pushing a double baby stroller kind of thing. So to think about, you know, hey, who, you know, when you're developing the trail, not just connectivity, but who's it for, who's using it, you know, and how are we making that best for everybody and making it safe.
City Manager David Mitchell, I just want to point out to council, we do have coming up, I don't know if we have a date actually on there yet or not for it, Julie, but we do have the pedestrian priority plan coming to you. That's something that staff is working on. We're going to put together a score sheet, prioritize those, looking at things like giving them additional points if they connect to a school, you know, a neighborhood to a school, a neighborhood to a park, those kind of things. We're going to develop a score sheet. This will be something else that we'll need to include in the score sheet, is this 10-minute walk time. I know Jeff will be on that team as well. But we're going to sit down as a staff, score those, and then bring them to you with our recommendations, and y'all have a chance to kind of look through it, modify it if you feel like we need to do that. We think it's important as well for additional grants, even outside of the Texas Parks and Wildlife grants. There may be some Texas transportation grants that having that priority system set up will help us with as well.
Yeah, I think the challenge that we have fiscally, the world as it is right now, getting grants is critical.
Is this time for recommendations, Mr. Mayor?
Just go ahead and sound off. This is, whatever you got to say.
This is okay. So on the batting cages, I would like to see. I'm glad to see the batting cage on a priority. Hopefully we could get the batting cage to standards, and hopefully while we get that batting cage to standard, there's a way that we could also generate funding for the parks so that we can make them better. The When at TML, I got an opportunity to attend the TML Parks session, and I thought it was great about bringing parks into the community. So when you're doing your assessment, David, about your streets, find locations where it might be open space where we could merge the open space with the kids in that kind of age group, because a lot of times all those high school kids, it happens that they're all located, you know, probably maybe one or within the same family housing development or section. So maybe they could be spaces there within those areas where we could put those skateboarding opportunities for those kids that are into that. I just wanted to make sure that we, the residents, we apparently we missed it. How so many people did not know about a wonderful park is beyond me, but you know, numbers don't lie. So I would like to see that as a person gets their light bill and is welcome to the city, that they know that this is what we have available. That's pretty much all I have. Thank you for listening. Over back to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Blomquist.
This is Michael Bompas, Mayor Pro Tem. On your fourth tenant there, the innovation portion there, I think we touched on it briefly at one of the meetings we had. But was there a lot of discussion or requests for, like, making some of the parks potentially hot spots? Because, you know, nowadays everybody's tied to their phone. And I know recently, and I don't know if it's still a fad or still going, but the Pokemon thing was a big thing where there was big groups of people walking around. You know, they come up here to City Hall, or they go over to the park, you know. But those are the type of things that, you know, can bring people to the park that normally wouldn't go to the park and bring them into those areas. So I just, did you get any feedback on that from when you were surveying the folks? Or
specifically, no. I mean, there really wasn't a lot that was highlighted in any of our survey comments. I am glad that you brought that up, because that was at our second public meeting when that came up, and I don't think we added anything specifically, but that would be a very
I mean, you wouldn't want to, I don't think you necessarily need to do it at all the parks, but maybe some of the bigger parks, you know, where there's right. A lot more activities, because, you know, and that's not something you have to have on 24/7, maybe just when the parks are active. Mm-hmm. You know, that way when the parks and no one's supposed to be in there at 11 o'clock or whatever time it is, they shut them off. But that way it gives you a little bit more activity of why, you know, people that normally might not be going there other than if their kids are playing soccer or something, but that way you have
we'll
a
work in the park.
Well, yeah,
like
you could do
laptop.
Yeah, somebody could do some work or something.
Yeah.
And you know.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's a very easy thing that we could
talk about. But that would fit perfectly in that innovation block there, I think. So
you bet.
People would walk from Starbucks over there, like get their coffee, go sit at the park, but they would. I mean, I work sitting outside all the time. But
yeah, I had a.
Still going.
It's still going, yes. We saw when City Hall was shut down, I guess there's a Pokemon's popular here in the parking lot.
Right.
And Jerry and I commented about the number of people we kept seeing pulling up, thinking they were coming, thinking City Hall was open, but they weren't.
No, they're coming from Pokemon.
Oh, how funny. Pikachu is there.
There's still a strong following.
I was at my daughter's soccer tournament in College Station. There at the big veterans complex there, and that same day there was a Pokemon meetup, and it was amazing. I mean, short of, you know, 200 to 300 folks that were walking around the park, some of them with two phones. You know,
yeah. Some of them would trip over bushes, like in people's yards that were trying to get places, and they were like, "This is like, what happened?"
Yeah, I mean, technology is with us. I mean, we're, you know, tethered with that for good or bad, but it certainly speaks to the power of getting people outdoors, and that's the first step in having them embrace your parks. So, I think like what Jeff mentioned, that's a great thing for us to add to the implementation, is to look at that for our major parks.
Okay, anybody else have any other questions from the council? Do we have anybody that's on online that may have a question? Okay, Brent, do you have anything else for us?
Again, just want to reiterate my thank you to you guys.
Okay.
And Gary for today as well. Very seamless, so thank you.
Okay, Jeff, do you have anything else for us?
So one of the things that we'll do is, you know, our goal is to get an adopted plan from you guys that y'all will embrace. Once we're successful with that, we will, as Lutton Design Team, we'll submit that to Texas Parks and Wildlife. Essentially, that process is on, you know, a couple of days after that approved motion, Jeff will forward us the resolution. We'll scan it, put it to the front of the document, and we'll digitally submit it to Texas Parks and Wildlife. It typically takes 4 to 6 weeks for them to turn it around, but it's a fairly seamless process on that. But we'll take that responsibility for submitting the plan on the city's behalf. And again, the main thing that does is it just sets up that for any kind of future grants with Texas Parks and Wildlife, that that's more of a check the box that, hey, you're compliant. And that's in order to move forward with grants, you need to have that box checked. So, and we'll take care of that for you.
Yeah, in your experience from whatever that the grant has implemented, have you ever had the people that make those decisions to come visit and lay eyes on it?
Not so much for the open space master plan itself. Like, they won't come and tour Carl Levin and see if the inventory is correct.
Right.
What they'll do is they are more, for instance, the community park, you know, that they'll come back in and even at a 5-year time, make sure that any past grants that the city has had, that, you know, signage is in place, acknowledging that Texas Parks and Wildlife was a part of it, and that it's being maintained and the elements are still there. But not so much for the actual, for the plan itself that when we turn it in, they really won't come and have feet on the grounds to verify it.
Right. So the thing is, so if we put that in, though, I mean, are they out and about? I mean, do they go as, you know, not invited, just out and about, just yeah, looking, just like these corporate guys that come evaluate communities where they want to come build a big box store? I mean, do they do the same thing so that would support the document that we've sent to them?
You know, they know what's going on in the communities, and I say that because they travel a lot. I mean, you know, so my only frustration with Texas Parks and Wildlife is getting their voicemail, because staff, all the grants that they get applications for, they do go visit, which means they're not in the office.
Okay.
And so, but to answer your question, it also means that, yes, they're out and about. So if Colleen has a grant application going in and they're coming up from Austin, if they're coming up 35 and hitting 10, you know, if they're coming through Harker Heights. So if anything, those staff at Texas Parks and Wildlife gets bored and they want to come eat at, you know, a local restaurant that they've heard about, or, you know, they're seeing your community. So yeah, okay, there's eyes, yeah, and those feet on the ground. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, David.
Jeff, maybe you or Brent may want to speak to the fact that we hope to have more grant funding, I mean, in the future. I mean, that was something you mentioned earlier. We had Carl Levin and as well as our Rec Center for both projects, but a lot changed in those grant dollars thereafter, because you see we've not done a lot with that since, but the hope is that there'll be additional dollars. You want to speak to that, Jeff, with the changes with the tax dollars?
With Parks and Wildlife in general?
Yes.
Yeah. So as you probably all well know, because Jerry Bark had such a huge role in that, and is that what you're wanting me to speak
yes
to? Yeah. So the sporting goods sales tax in this last you know, legislative session became, you know, it was a constitutional amendment to make sure that money goes to Texas Parks and Wildlife, which is obviously going to impact the local parks grants. So there was a lot of stuff that kind of occurred with the local parks grants that, you know, money would get taken from that and placed in something else within Parks and Wildlife that needed deferred maintenance at one of the state parks, may take some money away from local parks grants. But now that there's guaranteed funding for you know, Parks and Wildlife, at least through the sporting goods sales tax revenues, that's going to solidify, you know, at least and Jerry's going to be able to speak more to that, how much that's going to impact, you know, how many dollars are going to actually go into that. But we're going to have more opportunities to receive a grant. There will be more cities that are, you know, up for those because there will be more money now. So the work that, you know, someone in-house has done on that is, you know, made a huge impact on that statewide, and obviously that's going to benefit us when we, you know, put an application in to either improve something in a park or build something new. So,
right.
Obviously, there's a lot of pent-up demand for that too. So we'll see a lot of cities compete for that.
pretty high percentage too, wasn't it?
We will sure use Jerry's name as much as we can. You all know Jerry Bark. He was.
It was a pretty high percentage too of the sales, isn't it?
For the sporting
tax,
goods,
sorry.
It's 100% of the sporting goods sales tax
all
goes
it,
to
okay.
Texas Parks and Wildlife.
That's a
and
lot.
I'm a big supporter.
That is a lot.
Of
that.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, I knew it was high, but I mean, that's.
Jerry's going to be really disappointed that I don't have the specific numbers, but it's many, many millions a year that will go to that.
Yeah,
awesome.
Excellent. Okay, anything else on the topic? Okay, hearing none, the time is 4:06, and we're adjourned.
Thank you.
This conference is no longer being recorded.